Blog Talk Radio.
On Instagram at B_Lee253. And you can find my report on tonight's NXT up on PW Torch and on the VIP side of the .com. So check it out there. No Kelly tonight. He has this dumb thing called an anniversary, but whatever.
Yeah, who does that, right? No, happy anniversary, Kelly. I'll actually be nice. I'll be nice. Happy anniversary, you know. I mean, I guess your wife at least deserves one. So there's that. Anyway. Sorry, I had to go there. I had to. Anyway, let's go to, let's talk about, instead of talking about the main event here tonight, before we get into the main event here tonight, let's talk about the 300-pound blonde gorilla in the room. And that is Mandy Rose's exit from NXT last week. News broke, I want to say it was the morning after we recorded our podcast. And I think by the time our podcast actually dropped on the Daily Cast, the recording anyway, the news had already broken. So this is the first time we're actually talking about it on the show. Obviously, Mandy Rose was released last week after it kind of had come out that she had been posting some photos, lewd photos, and making a lot of money on those photos. On a fan's website, you know, she was kind of quietly released from the company. Certainly not expected. I didn't see it coming. I don't think really. I know she didn't see it coming. From what I read this past week, she kind of saw it. It completely blindsided her. But Bruce, what are you kind of your immediate thoughts on, you know, her release? And actually, you know what? Sorry, before we do that, I actually want to read, before we go to your thoughts, I'll throw it to you in a moment. I want to read an email from Zach Barber that came in earlier in the day. Fellas, I found Mandy's NXT character to be one note and misogynistic, but what Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and the WWE brass did to her was just wrong. Her whole character is I'm hot and all about sex appeal, yet her monetizing her own sex appeal is a bridge too far for them. Give me a break. This is a company that ran a Diva Search beauty contest for which the grand prize was a spread in Playboy magazine. The sheer hypocrisy of them being angry with Mandy for posting risque photos behind a paywall, mind you, is unreal. This has more to do with WWE wanting their independent contractors beholden only to them and not able to make money in any outside venture. It's a vestige of the previous regime I had hoped would go away, but clearly has not. I'm just glad Mandy was able to make $500,000 off of WWE's hypocrisy. If they thought they were hurting her, they thought wrong. Zach in Texas. So yeah, with that and with Zach's email, Bruce, what are your thoughts on Mandy's exit and all of the, I guess, a little bit of controversy surrounding it?
I really don't want to say too much because people have already been saying a lot of things and showing ass the last week or so, just discussing her release and sort of not being able to see the forest for the trees with this issue. So I'm going to leave that part there. I do think from what I saw reported is that while she saw the release coming as a surprise, she was at least notified ahead of time before the show happened last week that she was going to drop the title and be released. So I want to just, you know, we weren't the biggest fans of Mandy Rose on this podcast. And if you just go back to her time in WWE, she didn't always have the most positive comments regardless of what show she was on. But I kept saying, you know, she would win her NXT title defenses with usually her finisher, who was no interference. She was out there almost every week on TV for the show as the champion. She may have invented a lot of segments. And knowing the fact that she was going to be released and still last week came out, didn't show anything like she. There are certain wrestlers where you know they've been booked to lose. She still looked the same to me, the same confident champion. She came out there, she did her work, and then she gracefully took the fall and went. So I want to give her some kudos. And yeah, if she can make more money, which by all accounts she had been making before the release anyway, without having to take bumps and save her body all that punishment, good for her. Kudos to her. Do what you need to do. Make that money if it's what you feel comfortable doing, what your partner feels comfortable doing, if it's consensual, whatever it may be, do what you need to do, do what you want to do. Heck, you're making a lot more money than I'll ever make, so, you know, there's that. And I do think the issue was Mattel was bad with WWE about her stuff, and I would just say, why not just remove her from the Mattel line and not have her in the line and keep her there? But, you know, I don't think, not even just common sense, but just basic thinking goes through the minds of a lot of these decisions. So, you know, again, good for her, make her money and save the body on those bumps. And I think in the long run, that's going to be a benefit for her. And honestly, I can see WWE doing this and then later on bringing her back and in the commentary talking about her controversial release and alluding to what happened just to try and get more publicity out of it. And that's assuming she'd even want to come back. So that's what I'll say on that. I'll leave it at that.
WWE do something crazy like that? I never. I could absolutely see something like that happen. No, I pretty much agree with you. I mean, I think more power to her for, you know, being able to do her thing and, you know, make money and, you know, however you want to do it, go for it. You know, it's, I don't know, like, I definitely hear what Zach is saying in his email, you know, that, I mean, WWE has done some crazy things in the past with, you know, sex and sex appeal and, you know, a live sex celebration in the ring with Edge and Lita, if you recall.
They also have multiple alleged sexual offenders on their, or assaulters on their roster that are getting television time, but yeah.
You know, and, you know, hush money from the CEO and, you know, former talent relations guy and, you know, all that stuff. So yeah, the hypocrisy is certainly there. But at the same time, I mean, at least at the same time, publicly anyway, they're not trying to really, they're basically trying to stay PG for the sponsors and things like that. So I understand their position, from a business perspective, I guess. But the fact that independent contractors and they can't monetize their own body, for that matter, if they choose to do so, I don't know. I just don't think that's right. I really don't. Now that it is what it is, but I really think this is just kind of another notch in the argument for the whole independent contractor thing. If you're going to, you know, make it so they're beholden to your company and your company only, make them an employee, give them the benefits of all of that stuff. You know, I don't know. Anyway. All right. So that's kind of all we'll take on that and talk about that. You know, if anybody else or any other emails come in, want to talk about it, we will. But other than that, let's talk about our, I guess it was the main event. It wasn't really main event angle coming out of tonight. Grayson Waller earlier in the night had gone up to Mackenzie Mitchell. They're basically been interviewed by Mackenzie Mitchell talking about his win rather in the Iron Survival Challenge. Grayson Waller basically said that he was like, at this point, still like shocked that Roxanne Perez had won the NXT women's title, but it inspired him and he wanted to seize his own moment by challenging Bron Breakker there tonight. He was been informed by Mackenzie, Bron Breakker's not in the building, but Grayson's like, well, you show up tonight in the ring anyway, show up in the middle of the ring anyway, you're a coward. And you know, kind of saw him throughout the course of the night looking backstage for Bron Breakker, showing up in various other segments and things looking for Breakker. He went out to the ring after our main event match tonight between New Day and Briggs and Jensen for the NXT titles, tag titles. But he went out to the ring after that, called Breakker out again, called him a coward for not showing up and things like that. We kind of thought it was going to be a little bit of a, or at least the way they were playing it was that, you know, it was going to be Grayson Waller just calling out Bron Breakker for being a coward simply because he wasn't there and he was on a press tour. Bron Breakker actually showed up and went to go attack Grayson Waller in the ring. And when he went to go do his spear, Grayson Waller was wearing body armor, knocking Bron Breakker out. So that's kind of where we left off tonight. I thought this was kind of a cool angle. It was a little far-fetched that like Bron Breakker supposedly, you know, out doing a media tour and then shows up within 2 hours. They didn't specify where he was. I mean, sure, maybe he was somewhere close by. They did say, okay, you know what? They did say North Carolina. You're right. They did say that now that you mention it. So we're supposed to believe that he made it somehow from North Carolina to the performance center in less than 2 hours. Unless he was already in flight, I don't see how that would have happened. But hey, you know, wrestling. Other than that, I thought it was kind of a cool angle. It also, you know, helped kind of to show Grayson Waller can outsmart Bron Breakker as he's done in the past. That's not very hard. No, not at all. especially with, you know, wearing the coat that he was wearing, you kind of had a feeling there might be something, like, I thought there was something weird going on with that big puffy, fur coat that Grayson Waller was wearing, but it didn't occur to me there was something in the coat until Bron Breakker speared him and then got knocked out. And I'm like, oh, he's got like the chest protector D'Lo Brown style under there or something like that. So I think, like I said, I thought it was interesting. It kind of helps to, you know, further their storyline and kind of further the, intelligence, if you will, of Grayson Waller and how he can outsmart Bron Breakker. I did like it, even though there's some elements to it that were a little far-fetched. Bruce, your thoughts on the main event angle?
I did note in my report that Breakker, in kayfabe at least, what's the word? Corroborated, I guess. Waller saying that, I know you're watching, you have USA and you're watching on your phone or whatever. So we know you did that because of how furiously he came back. And I also noted that he must have his own private jet or something because he got back quick from North Carolina. Now, I've never done a North Carolina to Florida flight. I've never been further east than Helena, Montana. So I can't say much to that, but I don't think you can get to the airport, get on your private flight, get to the airport back in Florida, and then get to Full Sail within, I think Waller calling him out wasn't even the first segment, so I'd say within about an hour 45, an hour and a half maybe. So that's what
broke not only some laws of the United States, but some laws of physics.
Yeah, I guess he's Axiom. But that stuff aside, you know, maybe he was in flight, who knows, or maybe he was already back, it just was at home or something. Okay, cool. Breakker has always been booked as a hothead who's more apt to use his physicality rather than his brains. So, and then when you look at Waller, he's always been booked as someone who, while physically gifted, is very cunning and intelligent, and usually cunning comes with intelligence. You don't usually get one without the other. So for him to do something that outsmarts Breakker, again, which isn't very hard with how Breakker's booked, it fits the character, it fits the angle, it fits how you would think that someone in this situation would try and get a one-up on Breakker heading into the title match, which I think is only in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, less than 3 weeks maybe, I don't even know. So I thought it was, when Breakker hit the ring, I was confused as to why Waller didn't just bail, like, oh, he might be actually turning a corner as a character. And then when Breakker hit the spear, I noticed he was just laying on top, like, oh, did he actually knock himself out on that spear? And that's when Waller started moving, I was like, oh, of course, he has some kind of material underneath his jacket. And thinking about his jacket, I think what they did here was subtle but smart, because if he had the jacket closed the entire night that every time he appeared, and he appeared several times throughout the night, then I think we would have been more hip to him having something under there. But if you remember, up until he came out for that main event, or I guess that last segment of the night, the jacket was open. He didn't have it zipped up. And so it didn't even occur to me that when he did come out with it zipped up, that it must mean that he had something underneath his jacket. So I think what they did there was at least for me, because, you know, I'm also writing the report and whatnot. It's something I might catch if I had been watching just without having to do that. But I still think it was a good way to not completely signal what was going to happen in the main event segment. So good for them there. Like Kelly said, at this point, I'm just waiting for Breakker to lose. And if Waller is the person to take it off of him, great, because people hate him, which means that when it comes down to it, you might get some people who will watch just to hate watch for him. But also, he's just far more entertaining than Breakker has ever been, not just as champion, but as a character. And I think just having Waller as a champion will give us plenty of things to discuss on a week-to-week basis beyond just why does he keep yelling in his promos and are his matches going to be anything more than they already are, which is what we're doing with Breakout pretty much. So I'm looking forward to Grayson Waller feud. I think what they did here was good, and it just is that the next week or 2 weeks have to be something continually like this. I just fear that what they're going to do is have Waller get over on Breakout using some mind games on NXT only to have Breakout retain when it comes to New Year's Evil.
That's kind of my only concern, too, because at this point, I'm in the same camp. I want to see Bron Breakout lose. I've said it multiple times on the show. I feel like his run has been stale for months at this point. I don't think of Bron Breakout as champion unless I actively have to think of Bron Breakout as champion, you know. So I would love to see the title off of him and see the title kind of move into a different story altogether. Grayson Waller, I feel like, would be a great person for that. Carmelo Hayes would also be a great person for that. If this this feud with Waller is just to set up another win for Breakout after mind games and things like that, as you just said. We'll see what happens. I just think it is beyond time. It is beyond time to have him drop that title. So. Anyway, 515-605-9345. That is the number to call if you would like to be part of this show. We actually don't have anybody in the caller queue tonight, so we'll kind of move on and keep talking here, but you can call us there and press 1 on the pin pad to let us know that you want to be on the show. Or you could email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and send an email in like Zach Barber did earlier tonight. So let's keep moving on here. We'll talk a little bit about talk about our opening match tonight, Carmelo Hayes versus Axiom. So we saw basically a pretty explosive opening match here tonight between Axiom and Carmelo Hayes, where Carmelo Hayes did pick up the win after Trick Williams got involved and basically allowed a distraction. Was it a distraction, or did he actually hit Axiom?
He grabbed Axiom by the head and slammed him to the mat.
Okay, I thought, as I was saying, it was a distraction. I'm like, no, it wasn't. So thank you. Allowing Carmelo Hayes to pick up the quick win right there. I thought this is a great match to kick off NXT. You've got, you know, two incredible, like, in-ring performers in Carmelo Hayes and Axiom to, you know, basically kick off the show. And like I said earlier, in an explosive fashion, on paper, I think this was a great match, and I think they delivered. Carmelo Hayes, you know, picking up the win, you know, due to Trick Williams interference, classic Carmelo Hayes, which I, you know, feel like plays right into his character. So I'm totally fine with that, that win there. And I'm still really high on Axiom as well. I mean, he puts on a great performance every time he's out there. You know, as I can't remember if it was you or it was Kelly. I know it wasn't me that brought it up, but it was one of you guys. You know, that basically said Axiom, the gimmick is not like, it's not something that you think is going to be a long term gimmick. It's kind of probably something that's not necessarily going to get over. And I tend to agree. But I enjoy it while it's here. I feel like if, you know, they make a couple tweaks to the character that it, you know, potentially could. I don't think it would ever be like a main event gimmick, but I mean, it could be a decent mid-card gimmick for a while. But I feel like if he was to, you know, get a different type of a gimmick, something that's a little bit more, you know, main roster, not main roster, main event level, if you will, you know, he could certainly go far in the business, in the company too. So great match here tonight between the two of them to open it up. Bruce, your thoughts on the opener?
This is what you want in an opener. I prefer if they didn't go to commercial break as much as they do during these matches, because it just takes me out of the flow, especially of something that was a great match like this, and how it was going heading into the break. That drop kick that Axiom hit on Carmelo Hayes before the first commercial break was picture perfect. It was right to the mouth. He was so high, parallel with Hayes's head, just amazing. The one thing with Axiom that I think he wasn't able to do as a kid is, you know, as a kid, while his offense and his and what he did looked flowy and fluid and fun, it never really looked like it hurt. It never really looked like it was very impactful. What he's done as Axiom is turn it up a notch. If you just think about what he did in that Iron Survivor Challenge match and looking at tonight, even on all of his flippy type of moves, he's doing something to add a little bit of oomph to it, a little bit more impact to make it seem like when he does hit it, it hurts. And so I want to give him credit there. You know, with Carmelo Hayes, I wrote after this match that it feels like at this point, Carmelo Hayes is just treading water in NXT. And maybe some might quibble with this, but I think he's become bigger than the brand. And he needs to be on Monday or Fridays. And I don't think that's an argument at this point. I think, I don't know if there's, I think like Solo Sikoa, he's kind of at a point where he might plateau more in NXT than grow. And I think the place where he has a chance to grow more is on Monday or Friday night, especially when he's up against performers, wrestlers who have years and years and years of experience, not just in wrestling, but within WWE and how to get yourself over as a star in WWE and those types of things. So while I do think he's treading water, this kind of leads into something later. Him being revealed as Apollo Crews' next opponent, I think signals two different things that we need to be aware of. And one is that I don't think this match is there for Carmelo Hayes to go over. And so I think that means Crews is going over. And the second thing is, I think that will signal Hayes' departure from NXT, is him giving the NXT rub to Crews, which is sort of an inverse of how you usually have it with the NXT person coming from, you usually have them get the rub or give the rub to someone who's coming up within NXT as they go off instead of someone coming back to NXT. So I think that's what's going to happen here due with this version of Axiom going back to him because of how he's sort of ramped it up both as an in-ring competitor and as a character on the mic. It's just, will they have the confidence, I think, to do that to a masked wrestler who's not Rey Mysterio? And even with Rey Mysterio, we have to remember, they weren't necessarily fully behind him on everything. So, great opener, great match. Just think that Carmelo Hayes needs to be off of NXT, as much as it pains me to say, because I love watching his matches. The ending sequence where he hit that code breaker and just went right into the nothing but net. Just so smooth. And, he's going to turn a lot of heads once he does hit Raw or SmackDown.
I could not agree with you anymore. I said it in the hits and misses as well. One wonders why Melo's still in NXT. You know, he's one of the most polished, if not the most polished act on the card, the brand, rather. Pretty deadly. Yeah, pretty deadly certainly ranks up there. Grayson Waller definitely ranks up there. But, I mean, I feel like Carmelo Hayes is just so ready to be plucked out of developmental, put on the main roster, and you've got a made star right there. You could throw him right in the main event scene if you wanted to. I could see him riffing against, I could see him riffing against Roman Reigns. Or if you want to debut him in a little bit, less of a fashion or something, debut him in the U.S. title scene, IC title scene. And I think you, if you have him specially packaged with Trick Williams, the way they, the way they've been, they'll make a huge impact on the main roster. I like the way you put that. They're going to turn heads. Absolutely going to turn heads. So yeah. All right, cool. So that is Carmelo Hayes versus Axiom. Let us move on to a match. I guess we're just going to talk about, to get it out of the way, Nikita Lyons versus Zoe Stark, which it didn't really happen. This match did happen. It was a match later that didn't happen. I'm sorry. This match did happen. I'm confusing things in my brain. So we finally saw Nikita Lyons, Zoe Stark come to blows. Nikita was making her entrance and Zoe Stark attacked her from behind. They had a bit of a brawl on the entrance ramp before hitting the ring. This is one of the better matches I think Nikita Lyons was in. It had a bit more of like a real fight feel to it, and I think that was all Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark and her new heel persona. She's really really amping it up. She's one of my favorite movies would say she's turning it to 11. She absolutely has. And I feel like it came through here tonight in this match. Nikita Lyons still has a lot to learn and improve on. I feel like she is getting better. I have to give her credit there. But at the same time, I still feel like she's not nearly where she should be for the position that they're putting her in. Certainly since Triple H has been back, they've kind of laid off on her push the way that it was going, while Triple H was gone and recovering from his heart issue. But yeah, overall, I'm kind of interested to see where this goes. Zoe Stark picked up a win, after using, the ropes for leverage to get a roll up. I have a feeling we're probably going to wind up seeing this at Vengeance Day, the final blow off here between the two of them. It's been something that's been building for a while. So I feel like it's probably it could be a singles match that they put on the Vengeance Day card. I don't think it's going to go to Stand and Deliver, but I could certainly see them putting it on Vengeance Day. Bruce, Nikita Lyons, Zoe Stark.
I think it's going to happen at New Year's Evil, but let's see. So
we didn't have New Year's Evil. Crap. I got to change the hits and misses because I've met the next one. I forgot about hits and misses because they kept promoting Vengeance Day tonight.
Yeah, but New Year's Evil is coming up as well. I think it's in 2 weeks, and they mentioned that a couple of times tonight. But they didn't show any real promos like they did Vengeance Day. I think it's because Vengeance Day they're trying to get tickets to sell because it's their first touring show since the pandemic.
Right.
Outside of Florida, I should say. It's their first large, and I guess televised touring show because they did do some of the Florida shows again. So I wrote that as far as Nikita Lyons matches goes, there have been far worse than what they put on tonight. It definitely didn't hurt that Zoe Stark was her opponent. When it comes to Nikita Lyons, I think the biggest thing with her is that she needs to have more confidence in her offense. And because right now it doesn't seem like she does. And because of that, it comes off as unbelievable in the bad connotation. And that hit Zoe Stark one time tonight too, when she went for a cyclone kick to the back of Stark. She kind of let up at the end, and I wasn't sure if she let up because she was scared of hurting Stark or Lyons, or if she wasn't sure of her aim. So, Lyons isn't the only one who has that issue, but it just seems that she has it a lot more often than others. But yeah, there's still some sloppiness in the match, mostly on Lyons' part, but still, again, not anything compared to what we've seen in the past from her, and nothing compared to the women's match later in the show, the women's singles match later in the show. So, the thing that really bugged me about this match is having Zoe Stark beat Lyons by a roll-up with the rope grab. If anyone on the women's roster has been booked to be able to beat Nikita Lyons legitimately, it's Zoe Stark. Sure, I get it. Story, Stark was attacked from behind, all that. She's a heel tactic. Stark hasn't been booked as a heel who is weaselly like Grayson Waller. She's been booked as a heel who can kick your ass. And so I think that was a miss for me in terms of, sorry to take your gimmick, Nate, but just in terms of how they booked that ending, because again, what did Lyons do in that match to Stark that she needed to pull that out to win? Maybe, if she wanted to get out there quick, she could have done that earlier, but that ending aside, Stark looked pretty good. If you remove that cyclone kick segment, there were a couple quality control things tonight that I think we need to look at. And this wasn't the only women's match where there was a run-in attack during an entrance. We saw that with Alba Fire, who was actually attacked twice during the night by Isla Dawn. And then I think when you watch the opening match and then another match later in the show, they both had segments where somebody put the opponent into a bow and arrow submission and the opponent turned around and or rolled over into a pin. So they need to, and of course, it's always tope's, but I think you need to make sure that when you're looking match by match and how things are being set up, if they're being called on the fly, okay, you can't do anything about that there. But if matches are being planned out, you need to make sure that there aren't these spots in multiple matches, I think, throughout the night, because it stood out to me. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who caught that. So, and if you are having someone out there calling it on the fly, which I'm not sure you really want to do that in developmental, unless it's like Alba Fire versus Wendy Chu or Pretty Deadly versus The New Day, let the people who are calling it on the fly know of the spots that are happening earlier in the night so they don't repeat what's happened. And it's worse when it's in back-to-back matches. At least this happened a few segments apart, but it's still something to it's still one of those little things that can be fixed that I think will add a benefit to the show.
And the mute button strikes again. I can't disagree with you really on anything you said there. So let's move on. Let's talk about, let's go ahead. Let's talk about Toxic Attraction versus, not Casey Catanzaro, Katana Chance and Caden Carter. I'll get that eventually. It'll stick that her name is Katana Chance. I just did it right there. Katana Chance, Caden Carter versus Toxic Attraction versus Ivy Nile, Tatum Paxley for the NXT Women's Championships. And we did see We saw Casey and Caden retain. I'm not even going to correct myself. I've just been bumbling over this entire thing. We saw them win, retain their tag titles here tonight after a pretty decent triple threat tag team match. I'm not usually a fan of triple threat matches, triple threat tag matches, especially too. It was on the better side of okay. There was a lot of high spots mixed throughout the match, especially coming from Katana Chance, big Hurricane Rana off the top rope with she was Casey or Caden Carter had I forget who she had on her shoulders, but Katana
Tatum
Chance.
Tatum Paxley.
It was Tatum Paxley. Okay. And a huge, huge Hurricane Rana off the top, which I thought looked great.
It looked even better because she had to go even higher to get than just the top rope. She had to go even higher because she was sitting on top of her partner. Yeah, her partner's short, but still, you're sitting on top of someone's shoulders.
Yeah, so it was definitely impressive. I'm glad to see them retain. I'm a big fan of the two of them. They've they're one of the longest tag teams on the roster that have actually, been together. They've been through quite a bit. I've watched their whole story in NXT, starting from the Mae Young Classic. So like to see them as champions, I'm all for it. The big question for me now with Toxic Attraction is like, what's going to happen with them now Mandy Rose is gone. Mandy was kind of, obviously their leader. She was kind of directing the group. So with her gone, I'm wondering if they're still going to get pushed the way they're getting pushed, or if they can even really sustain that. And I don't really have the faith that they can. But are they going to wind up kind of fading into, I don't want to say obscurity, but, fading way down the card, slipping down the card. Ivy Nile, Tatum Paxley here, I thought were, they were on definitely a bit better than I expected. Every time I see Tatum Paxley, I'm kind of on board with her more and more. I thought both of them did a great job here tonight, and I'm really enjoying that tag team. So, Bruce, on the Women's Tag Team Championship match.
I just feel like you're reading my reports because I led off by discussing what this means for Toxic Attraction.
That's how I started my hits and misses, too.
It was a taped show, so it's not surprising to me that we didn't see anything relating to Mandy Rose's release or Toxic Attraction bringing up. Because how sometimes they'll bring up, which Chase you when Bodhi was released, they motion to an empty chair or shirt to kind of signify that they're acknowledging it. So nothing of that was done tonight, which doesn't surprise me because I think this was taped after last week's show. So And the only thing we saw with Mandy Rose tonight was the opening intro video for Roxanne Perez's title victory recap. I'm assuming next week there will be something regarding Toxic Attraction and Mandy Rose, just some sort of allusion. And for me, I said, do they go to Raw? Do they go to SmackDown? Do they stay on NXT? Do they get a new leader wherever they go? And I said, Zoe Stark, maybe. So Dolan and especially Jade are ready to be solo acts. And I don't think that as a tag team, they have enough as themselves to really sell me on them. Together, they just seem more like gatekeeper tag team to me. And so I feel like they do need some sort of leader. Now, would Zoe Stark at this incarnation be a good choice? I don't know. It seems like when they bring Tiffany Stratton back, they want her to be a face, so that wouldn't work either. And I don't think that they would, after tormenting her for so long, I don't think they would defer to Cora Jade. So if I'm looking at anyone on the roster right now, I'd probably say Zoe Stark is a good bet or a good option to make their new leader somehow. You can always work it in that. They had their rivalry as tag teams when Stark and Lyons were a tag team. So you could say that, Stark went around during this rivalry and they helped her defeat Lyons at New Year's Evil, and they aligned herself with Stark, and Stark, is their new mouthpiece and their new leader. And I think that gives a different dimension to what Toxic Attraction has been, because I would take this group with Stark as a leader more believably as I did with Mandy Rose. Because, as you were talking with the first email, they came off more as, with 2.0, we want to be able to sell you the eye candy. And while Rose was a fighting champion, her gimmick was still based around her being basically before she came to WWE, a fitness competition model. So with Stark, you have someone who's really just out there trying to beat up people, which is always fun in wrestling and always something you can get behind. So for TA, I think that the best route for them probably is stay on NXT, because I don't think they're polished enough yet as a tag team. There were some spots tonight where JC Jane didn't look great. Ivy Nile had one spot where she clearly froze and wasn't sure what to do. For Toxic Attraction, I think getting a new leader like Stark would be the way to go. The match was fast-paced. The first half of the match made me concerned it was just going to be a spot fest, but they worked in some story, and it really became something about, as Booker T was mentioning when this match started, how the champion always finds a way to win these matches, even though they usually come in as the underdog because of their size. And I do like the hope spot they gave to Tatum Paxton and Ivy Nile at the end with the Dragon Slayer submission she put on Kayden Carter. And because how many times I've seen Samoa Joe be pinned by someone rolling him up in the Coquina Clutch just like this, I will say, I appreciate the fact that Chance was holding down Niles' shoulders while rolled up on her, and Nile was trying to furiously kick with her legs to get her shoulders off the ground. That added a bit of grittiness to the ending that I thought probably wasn't going to be there. So kudos to them. That was a good little bit at the end. Little details like that show me Carter and Chance are definitely improving beyond just being known for their flips and their dives and things like that. And so we continue the story of them being these underdog champions that continue to pull it out. One thing that they mentioned is they're 17 days shy of Toxic Attraction's record for longest NXT Women's Tag Team Championship title reign. So I think that equates to about New Year's Evil time. Let's see what happens.
See what happens indeed. All right, let's move on to Indy Hartwell versus Electra Lopez. I think that was the match you were alluding to earlier in the night. Yeah. This was definitely a match that happened on the card tonight. Electra Lopez went over after channeling her inner William Regal, finding some brass knucks in a turnbuckle pad, and using those brass knuckles to score the victory. Okay, I love Indy Hartwell. She's hit or miss in the ring, but I give her a pass because I have a soft spot in my heart for Indy Hartwell. Electra Lopez, not that, you know, and I did, again, nothing against Electra Lopez either, but she has a long way to go in the ring. And I don't even feel like she's TV ready, to be honest, in the ring, let alone, you know, even though this is developmental, I get it. I don't feel like she's even ready to be on TV, period. I think she still needs a lot of work. It's no surprise she did not go up to main roster with Legado del Fantasma. We even talked about that before Legado went up. We didn't think she would be part of the package. I think it makes sense, especially if this is what she wants to do. She wants to be a wrestler rather than like a valet or manager. She's got a lot to go. And I hate speaking poorly like that, because like I want to see everybody succeed, but I obviously, you know, kind of have to blame NXT and you know a little bit too for putting her in that position when I really don't think she's ready. Her character work is ready. You know, I feel like her character is on point and she knows what she's doing, but yeah, in the ring she's got a long way to go. Bruce, on this match.
Yeah, so I'll say that the ending is definitely an ending that was booked for the TV audience. It's really hard for the live audience to see that ending unless you're sitting hard camera side because of the turnbuckle and the sort of, I guess, overall sneakiness of her using it. And because Hartwell's back and Lopez is back and the referee's back, was to the audience facing the hard cam that you see on the show all the time. And because of that, the majority of the audience wasn't able to see that she had brass knucks in her hand and that she was able to use that. Now, I don't know if the announcers were just selling it, but they seemed like they had no idea what happened too. Even for me who was watching and recapping, maybe because I'm going back and forth, it was a little difficult to see at first. But once I saw her put something on her hand, I realized she had the brass knucks on. She did a good job of hiding the knucks during her pin. So that is a positive there. But you really have to next week get Lopez in the backstage segment or Hartwell out there and really hammering home that she was able to use the brass knucks to beat her and not, you know, using any sort of wrestling maneuver or a wrestling match. And for Hartwell, after being on such a good winning streak, she lost that singles match 2 weeks before deadline. And then she lost the triple, She lost the her singles match, I think, a week or two before deadline. And then she didn't win the Iron Survivor Challenge match. And here she is losing a match to Electra Lopez, who she has improved. But the whole thing with her, going back to her match with, was it B-Fab? She was never, or B-Fab or Elias, one of the two, or maybe both. She was never ready to be on
TV. It was B-Fab.
Yeah. And again, don't want to say anything negative about her, but this is the place to be if she wants to develop as a wrestler. And as a developmental show, we are going to have matches like this where people are showing their growing pains. And I will say her gear does seem to be a little bit improved, though I feel like it has a bit of a Charlotte Flair inspiration to it. So when it comes to Hartwell, I really just want them to either figure out if they want to pull the trigger or if they just want to keep her where she's at. I think there's something there with the fans, and they really want to see her succeed, or at least get the opportunity to be in that top spot and see what happens. I don't think in ring she's ready for that, but as a character, she definitely has it down. Making that change to what she is now, I think fans are ready to get behind her. So the one thing that hasn't been addressed, though, is since D'Angelo has come back, he has mentioned Electra Lopez once or twice. Are we going to ever get any sort of closure or extension of her connection to D'Angelo? Or are we supposed to just think that ever since LDF left, she also is gone and did her own thing and she's no longer associated with them? So I want to see that part closed up, but that might just be me being a little nitpicky on stories that they've had, because they don't always, sometimes they'll quickly adjust and don't always address things that have happened in like the first 2 or 3 weeks of a character's build or a feud. If it's something if they pivot from. So, but again, that's just me wanting them to basically tie up loose ends.
All right, let's move on to the match that didn't actually happen tonight. Alba Fire versus Sol Ruka. So we saw Alba Fire get attacked backstage earlier in the night by Isla Dawn. I thought it was a red mist, but they then later referred to it as a red powder. But it was a red substance of some sort that got like spit or blown into Alba Fire's eyes. She's writhing around on the floor in pain, you know, saying it burns and all of that. She goes to medical. Medical did wind up clearing her in another segment later on in the night, and allowed her to wrestle. When she came out to actually fight in the match after Sol Ruka made her entrance, during Alba Fire's entrance, she was attacked by Isla Dawn. Isla Dawn took Alba Fire's arm and put it in between like the steel steps and the ring post. There's like a little gap between the steps and the ring post. Put her arm down there, and then used Alba Fire's own baseball bat to seemingly break the arm. I'm assuming that they're going to say it was a hand. Okay. But break some bones of Alba Fire is kind of what I'm assuming the storyline's going to be. Especially with, I mean, it looked like a pretty vicious attack, even though obviously she didn't necessarily hit her hand. But I have a feeling that's what the story is going to be. I thought this was actually kind of cool. I wanted to see more, I wanted to see Sol Ruka in the ring. We haven't really got to see a whole heck of a lot of her since her debut. So I was actually kind of looking forward to the match, even though I had a feeling Alba Fire was probably going to squash her, or we were going to see Isla Dawn come out here at some point. But I didn't expect it to happen before the match even got underway. But at the same time, I think this was a good idea. They're trying to promote and push Isla Dawn as kind of this like supernatural. What do they call her? The demoness? Is that what they're calling her?
The wicked enchantress or something like that.
Enchantress. That's what it is. Thank you. They're calling her the wicked enchantress or something along those lines. And they're, you know, I think they're doing a halfway decent job playing with that right now. She's, you know, there's room for hokiness in wrestling. Sometimes I'm on board with it. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. I think I am here with Isla Dawn. I don't know if I was the last time we talked about this, but I think it's kind of growing on me, because they are booking her to be kind of like, powerful, not necessarily super hokey, but it's coming across as like it's I guess like a powerful type character to me. So at least somebody that can you know hang with Isla Dawn, Alba Fire, who's you know one of the toughest toughest women on the NXT roster. So I think it's a good way to get Isla Dawn, you get some shine on her, and you know promote like kind of book her up the card a little bit. So she could be, you know, potentially like I don't know how long, you know, Roxanne Perez's reign would be, but I mean, potentially, you know, a competitor or challenger rather, for Roxanne Perez. You know, we could see that down the line, or whoever might you know, hold the title next. But yeah, so far I like what they're doing with Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. I'm assuming we're going to see, you know, at least another blow off match whenever her hand winds up healing. Could be New Year's Eve, could be Vengeance Day, but we'll see where that goes. Bruce, on this quick match in the Isla Dawn and not even match, but you know what I mean, on the angle and the feud between Fire and Dawn.
I don't know. Making a ref spit out some gunk because he touched you is pretty hokey to me. But aside from that...
Oh, yeah. I kind of forgot all... I put that out of my brain. At least tonight they did okay with it. Last week, I forgot about that. Or 2 weeks ago, whenever that was. Forgot about that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The red powder in the back, that was, it was clearly powder. And then I think it was more effective because we're so used to them just showing them walking in and then heading to commercial right there that it was, and it was so sudden and just caught me off guard that I felt like it was even more effective in how it got over that it affected Alba Fire. And then, so she's in the back getting cleared, right? Or talking to the doc, trying to get herself clear. And, and the doc starts to talk. She goes, "I'm fine. I can see you, blah, blah. Just clear me." He goes, "Well, if you can see, you're clear." I'm like, "Damn, doc. My arm was dangling off the side of my body, you'd probably just be like, okay. And I told you I was good to go. You'd probably say, okay, you're good to go." But then again, when Ivy Nile said Brutus's rib was hurting, he just took that as, or as Julius' rib was hurting, he just took that as for her words. I don't. Maybe he just takes them for their words. So if she says he can see, he's like, okay, you can see. It's just a bit much. But with Sol Ruka, the thing that they kept putting over her finisher, they kept putting over her finisher because of how much it took social media by storm a couple weeks ago. I even had the whole match headline written out, and I had this thing about, I'm pretty sure Isla Dawn is going to interfere, which is going to cause Alba Fire to lose the match as Sol Ruka hits her finisher, her like inverted somersault cutter thing. And I think Vic Joseph called it Soul Snatcher, which, okay, I'll go with it. Nice little play on words there. So Sol Ruka got her entrance at least. Aside from that, poor Sol Ruka just not getting anything. And I think this is obviously heading in one of two directions for Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. We're either having a no DQ match or we're having some type of cinematic-like match that she had with Mandy Rose for Halloween Havoc. I think that's where we're heading with these two because I just don't see any other ending for what's been transpiring between these two women, especially with Isla Dawn's character. It just seems like we might be heading towards some kind of like Scottish fire pit match where they're outside and I don't know, I'm just whatever. Or they're outside in a circle of fire and grass, and they're just going, I don't know. It just seems like it's going some type of way with these two where a traditional wrestling match isn't going to work. So, yeah.
Baseball bat on a pole match.
Sure. if they went that way, that would be worse than just having a regular match. But I think it's heading in either the no DQ or the cinematic match direction.
I'd be all for a cinematic match. I mean, it's been a little bit since we've had one, and
Halloween Havoc wasn't that long ago.
And
it wasn't a
real
cinematic match, but it was still cinematic.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's true. That's true. We did get that segment with Alba Fire and Toxic Attraction. But yeah, I mean, I'd be all, and zombies. That's right. Zombies, they're still canon in NXT. Wrestling. But I'd be all for a cinematic match. Like I said, I mean, it has been a little bit since we've got one. You don't have to do them now that, it's not, COVID is, well, I mean, COVID's still a thing, but, whatever. We're kind of back to normal for the most part. You don't have to do that as much, but I think there's definitely something to be said for the cinematic match. I mean, hell, AJ Styles and Undertaker, that is one of my like favorite matches of the modern era. And it's a cinematic match. So gotta give it to that. So yeah, certainly could see something like that going on with Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. I had another point and then I started talking about cinematic matches and I completely lost it. So,
well, let's also make the point that for WWE, they may have started cinematic matches during the pandemic, but promotions outside of WWE have used cinematic matches before the pandemic to great acclaim. You think about Impact and the stuff with the Hardy Boys, I guess the Hardys and kind of the Final Deletion and all that stuff. You think about, Lucha Underground had a lot of cinematic stuff in it. And so it's not like cinematic automatically means it's going to be weird or hokey or just entertainment for the sake of entertainment, there are ways where they can make it, as you, you talk about the Boneyard match. I think the Cena-Bray Wyatt Funhouse match was probably my favorite of the cinematic matches because of the amount of stories that are being told. So there are definitely ways that you can make a cinematic match go beyond just, you know, let's have special effects for this. You know, it doesn't have to be Street Profits, Viking Raiders, and ninjas kind of thing, right? It can be more believable than that, which, you know, I think they can do with these two. Even if they have some of those elements, I think the physicality between the two has been believable enough to where when they do something like a cinematic match, if they do something like a cinematic match, I should say, them going after each other would be, believable.
Was the Profits and Viking Raiders during the pandemic era? Because I feel like it was so.
Yeah,
I mean,
it probably was pandemic when they had no fans still.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense because man, that feels like it was so long ago. But at the same time, like it feels like it just happened to. The last couple of years has been time is just weird. Time is just weird. Yeah, okay, cool. So on so that was on Sol Ruka, Alba Fire, and the Isle of Dawn thing. Let's go now to let's go to our main event match anyway of the night, seeing New Day retain their WWE NXT World Tag Team Championships against Josh Briggs. Huh?
It's one set of title. It's championship.
I don't know what I said.
It's a championship. I'm just saying it's one set of titles.
Okay.
So championship.
Championship. That works. That's fine. But we saw them retain against Josh Briggs, Brooks Jensen. I was really hoping that this was the way the match was going to go. And I had a feeling it was the way the match was going to go. We did see a very entertaining segment between the New Day and Pretty Deadly earlier in the night where Pretty Deadly is trying to get a rematch for the NXT tag titles. And New Day is basically just sending them on a scavenger hunt of sorts in order to get that opportunity, basically just making them run around like idiots. And I love it. It was great. There was a whole bunch of references to, they're making them pick up things like Kamala's mask, Tyler Breeze's selfie stick, which I thought was great. I'm so glad they made a reference to Tyler Breeze's selfie stick in there. Of course, Austin Creed's, Xavier Woods's relationship and friendship with Tyler Breeze on Up, Up, Down, Down. I thought that was cool, but it was a really entertaining segment. And because of that, I want to see more of Pretty Deadly and New Day, and I'm sure other people do too. So that was kind of why I thought the match was going to turn out the way that it did with New Day retaining. I honestly thought we were going to see Pretty Deadly interfere and kind of cost Briggs and Jensen the titles, or Kiana James and G were also sitting ringside. I kind of had a feeling maybe they were going to interfere in some way, costing Briggs and Jensen the titles. I can never remember Brooks Jensen, Briggs Jensen, the Jensen Brooks guys, the Cowboys. I don't know. But I had a feeling that we might see some interference here. But we didn't. It is what it is. That's great. New Day retains. We're going to see New Day in NXT for a little bit longer, which is awesome by me. I'm supremely enjoying them here in NXT. They feel kind of fresh again, and they're the most polished thing on NXT right now. So, in a way, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because part of it is they shine and they're fun and they're entertaining, but it also does kind of contrast with the rest of the developmental roster, that are still learning and kind of, they're not up to the same caliber as the New Day. But I think that's kind of a minor problem, but not a huge problem. I think the New Day bring a hell of a lot more, to NXT than they hurt. So, definitely all for them in NXT. I definitely think we're going to be seeing them versus Pretty Deadly either at New Year's Evil or at Vengeance Day. I'm hoping Vengeance Day, so they stick around a little bit longer here in NXT. So far, loving the New Day and what they're doing here in NXT. Bruce, on the tag title main event.
I think for people who are skeptical or downright negative regarding the New Day's move to not just move to NXT, but becoming the NXT tag team champion, this is the epitome of a match where I think you show them why it's good to have them in NXT, because I'm pretty sure this was Briggs and Jensen's best match as a tag team on NXT. So having the New Day down there with their years of experience combined between them. I think Kofi's been in WWE for 15, 16 years. Xavier Woods has been in WWE for about a decade, including starting in NXT. So just right there, you have over 30 years of experience, over 25 years of experience, depending on how long they've been in there. But you're looking at a lot, and for the most of the time, they've been a tag team. So, or Kofi Kingston has been in tag team and Xavier Woods has been in tag team. So I think Kingston has the most, off the top of my head, I believe Kingston has the most tag team title reigns with different partners in WWE history. I need to double check that, but I think that's right. Because I think of him as tag team champion with people like Matt Bourne. Matt Bourne. I meant Evan Bourne. And then you think about both of the New Day members. I think he was champion with was the Miz one time. There have been several people that he's been champion with. So just having them there adds so much. For me, this, you know, Briggs and Jensen, like I said, probably their best match. New Day, maybe you quibble with how much they've gave offense to Briggs and Jensen, but I think they did a good job of balancing that line and making Briggs and Jensen look really good and believable as sort of a future tag team to look at. They gave him good hope spots. Briggs and Jensen had some spots that I don't think we really see a lot. Like they had a double atomic drop sequence, and then one where Briggs basically threw, I think it was Woods, into a pop-up inverted atomic drop onto Jensen. So they were just doing some different things that I haven't seen them do before, and it's good to see them bust out things to expand their moveset. So I'm looking forward to the New Day facing off against teams like the Creed Brothers and Duchesne, maybe. Enofe and Blade, especially. I really want to see that match and see what they can bring out of Enofe and Blade, and especially Enofe and just the sequences they could put together. I want to see them on the mic with Enofe, Blade, and Odyssey Jones. You could even see the New Day versus Dyad and sort of the antics they could play with Schism and Joe Gacy. I think the New Day is going to last through Stand and Deliver. I think that's where they're going to drop it, probably to Indusher. I don't see this Indusher Creed Brothers thing ending at New Year's Evil. I think it ends at Vengeance Day, which then I think propels Indusher into the title match as Stand and Deliver. So I think that's the route that I see with the New Day. All the while, they're going against different teams, giving them the proverbial rub, helping elevate their game, and just spreading the knowledge down there, not just about tag team wrestling, but to individuals, too, about being in WWE, how to adjust, what it's like if you do make it to Raw and SmackDown. Just picking the brains of these two veterans who, if you're looking at it in NXT, Kofi's a one-time WWE champion. Woods hasn't won. Big E's a one-time WWE champion. And they might be the most money-making act of the past decade in WWE. And so you look at them for their longevity. You look at them to how to make money. And I say if you're in NXT, you try to spend every second you can learning from the New Day, and if you're a team, you're doing everything you can to what's the word I'm looking for, to sell yourself as opponents for the New Day during their time in NXT. So I'm looking forward to another match next week. I believe a match next week between the New Day and Pretty Deadly, or just continuing their feud with Angles, because these two are just perfect dance partners, both in the ring and as characters during promos. It's going to be so fun. The dynamic with the New Day is still a bit like when they're on Raw and SmackDown, but just different enough to where on NXT, it feels a bit fresh. And I think this little tweak is going to help them when they do eventually return to Raw and SmackDown, I would assume after WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So I kind of have a feeling they're going to wind up on the WrestleMania card because I can't imagine them losing out on the WrestleMania payday. But they're going to wind up on WrestleMania somehow. But yeah, once they do re-debut, you know, on the main roster, I think it's going to be huge. People are going to miss them on the main roster. Probably not necessarily keeping up with them down in NXT. So yeah, definitely.
And one thing too is I was sitting there waiting for their entrance, and I go, wouldn't it be so dope if all of a sudden you just hear Full Sail? But
right.
They're not gonna blow Big E's return as a surprise return on NXT. So I feel like they lose that stand and deliver, and then they make some kind of surprise appearance at WrestleMania, or Big E does some kind of surprise intro to start the show and just get people hyped, because he's still been doing some stuff on TV here and there, not for WWE, but for college football, and he's still got people hyping going. So I think if you can, and if he's healthy enough and he feels up to it, because who knows how much that adrenaline will be pumping for being out there WrestleMania, you know. If you can get Big E to do a surprise to start WrestleMania and just be like, Dallas, or where is it this year? Not Dallas, LA? Is it LA? Wherever it is.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, you know, that thing. I think great way to start WrestleMania, but it will be such a memorable moment for people that they will look back fondly on this WrestleMania, if only just because of Big E making that appearance, which I don't think he's made a WWE appearance since his neck injury. So that would be something big.
Yeah, I know the New Day got together on Woods's G4 show, whatever show it is he's on. I think it was back in like September, October, something like that. But yeah, I don't think they've been together like on WWE, or Big E's showed up on WWE TV since the injury. I would love to hear him, you know, at WrestleMania. That would be the well, I don't think there's a roof. Is there a roof? I don't know. I think there's a roof. I was going to say the roof would blow off the place.
They're at SoFi, right?
I think so.
I think there isn't a roof, and if there is, it's retractable.
Okay. All right. Well, regardless, the roof was going to blow off the place if Big E has something to do at WrestleMania. I think everybody would be like just super happy to see him. Even if, you know, I mean, I'm sure he can't wrestle at this point yet, but if he's ever going to be able to wrestle again, but even just to see him is going to be a huge moment whenever that does happen. But yeah, this match was a lot of fun. Brooks and Jensen, I do have to give them credit for, you know, as you said, kind of pulling out some new moves and their arsenal here. I still maintain that Josh Briggs he's the star of the duo, and he's being held back by Brooks Jensen, but is what it is. I'm kind of hoping eventually Briggs does get a chance to break off and do a singles thing, because I could see something in him. I can see something there. I don't think he'll be, you know, main event level guy, but he's got some intensity to him. Like when he was tossing standing outside the ring, tossing the New Day into the ropes, and then so they, you know, bouncing back off the apron and, you know, clotheslining him. Like I don't know if I've ever seen anybody do that before.
I believe, you know, so JD Drake did that before Briggs, but I think it was JD Drake. I could be wrong though, but it was someone else on the indies who definitely did that.
I mean, I'm sure I've seen it before, but like it's not something you see often, you know. And so just things like that, you know, where you can kind of be a little bit unique, even, you know, or more unique than others. I got to give him credit for that, because I thought that was a great spot. But yeah, overall, I think this is a great match, and I agree with you. I think Indu Sher would be a great opponent for the New Day to lose to. We think it would make sense, considering the size difference, and it would also propel Indu Sher to being like just a super dominant heel tag team in the division. So I think that would be that'd be awesome if we do wind up seeing that, you know, at Stand and Deliver or something like that. So while we're talking about Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs, why don't we talk about the segment, the bar segment, between the three, between them, Fallon Henley, Kiana James, and G. So as we know, Fallon Henley's family has a bar, and it's been having some financial issues. They showed the three of them sitting at the bar kind of discussing the financial issues when, as if on cue, Kiana James walks in with her assistant, G, and spouted a whole bunch of financial mumbo-jumbo that sounds like it could make sense, but I don't know enough to know whether or not it does or not. But long story short, she somehow put a lien on the bar, and if the thousands of dollars in taxes are not paid to the government, Kiana James can buy the bar for pennies on the dollar. They ended up making a match out of this. I think it was actually in a different segment a little bit later on in the night, right before the main event, where they made a match that they talked about this match. It was in the segment. It was in the bar segment. Basically, Fallon Henley challenged Kiana James to a match where if Kiana James wins, she gets to buy the bar for pennies on the dollar. And if she loses, what was the stipulation if Fallon Henley wins?
Fallon Henley wins, she keeps the bar. If Kiana James wins, then Fallon Henley agrees that her parents will sell the bar to James for pennies on the dollar.
Pennies on the dollar. Okay, that's right. That's right. I don't know why I just confused myself there. Thank you. Yeah, so that's kind of the stipulation. I thought it's a little weird and kind of far-fetched. I mean, I don't know enough about, like, real estate and things to know if the things that Kiana James were talking about was legit or not, but I'll give her the benefit of the doubt anyway because it sounded good. But, it is still kind of a little hokey in a way. I don't know how you can necessarily, like, force your way into buying something that's not yours, but whatever. Then also to the fact that Fallon Henley's just like, well, hey, I'm going to make it so my parents are, you know, my parents will sign this over, not even talking to her parents. I thought that was kind of a little far-fetched as well. But at the same time, you know, we had a WrestleMania match over a Japanese shampoo commercial. So wrestling, it is what it is. There've been weirder angles. I'm kind of okay with it. Curious to see where this goes, especially with Kiana James and Brooks Jensen and a little like romance that's forming there. I don't know if like maybe that will kind of signal a breakup between Brooks and Jensen, perhaps. Briggs and Jensen. As I was talking about a little bit ago. I'm curious to see how this actually all plays out. My guess is Kiana James winds up with the bar. I think it would propel her character up the card a little bit and make her come off as a much larger heel than she currently is. So I think that's the way this is going to wind up playing out. Bruce, over to you.
So I think you missed something because if I remember correctly, Kiana James said your parents haven't been paying the commercial taxes on the bar, which made them thousands of dollars in debt. And because of that, the bank put a lien on the bar. But James said that she bought out the debt, so technically she can now buy the bar straight from the bank because the debt hasn't bought out by her. And so when Fallon Henley challenged her to a match, she rightly said, why would I agree to that? And so Henley threw it out because she wants to keep the bar. With the debt's already paid for, right? Because Kiana James has paid the debt, so there's no more debt. But instead of... because even if you buy it from the bank, you still have to get the ownership stuff from the previous owner, right? So instead of having her pay more to the bank, she said, if you do win, then I'll have my parents sell it to you for less than what the bank would sell it to you for, kind of thing, right? Because the debt was bought out, I'm guessing the lien's gone now, right? So she could either buy it from the bank or she could buy it from Henley's parents at a cheaper price kind of thing. Again, I didn't go to business school. I'm not econ, whatever. But that was my understanding of the situation is that James bought out the debt that had put the bar on a lien. So as she rightly said, why would I agree to that match? But to be enticed by buying the bar even cheaper, which she can then see as a very small investment to something that she sees as having money making potential, because she told G as they walked in to take inventory of everything, right? I think, as you said, the battle for the bar probably goes James's way. I will say, Henley has had the most consistent improvement throughout the months on the women's roster, particularly from those not named Roxanne Perez who were in that breakout tournament. Then James had that breakout performance in the Iron Survival Challenge match. And so they might have more confidence in her too in terms of the future. And these are two of the women, I think, when you're looking at the sort of 2.0 class outside of Roxanne Perez, outside of Cora Jade, who you know is going to be, they might be kind of the dark horses, aside from, you know, when you look at Zoe Stark, you have the Kid Alliance, they're definitely going to push her. But then that next layer down, you might not be necessarily paying attention to as much, I think, is Henley and James. The other thing I think to pay attention to is what you were discussing, is at the end of that backstage segment, after their tag match where they lost, Kiana James came up and, you know, Henley made a comment and James said, I'm not even here for you. I'm here for Jensen and whatnot. And after they walked away, she turned to Mitchell, who was kind of smiling, who was like, well, and trying to ask her a question. And she said something like, I'm about business, but I'm also a woman, you know, with the insinuation that she has needs and desires, and good for her. And then as they walk away, you just see Mackenzie Mitchell have this big cheesy grin on her face, like, and so I thought that was really good, really funny. Mackenzie Mitchell is still the best overall character and everything in NXT. She's still great. So yeah, the thing is, does Jensen's infatuation with James, who may be just stringing him along to get the bar, does that ultimately lead to Henley's demise? Does it lead to the break of him and Briggs, as you were saying? What does this mean overall? Because they have two separate stories running concurrently here with these acts, and how they end both of them is going to be interesting, because I'm not sure if you can end both of them cleanly without them sort of bleeding into each other, if that makes sense.
I think it definitely makes sense. All right, so let's move on here. Actually, before we do, I just got to point out, I love the fact that they are allowing Mackenzie Mitchell to actually be like a character and not just like, you know, a pretty face that holds the microphone. I feel like that adds so much to this, like just so much to the show. I mean, me and Gene Okerlund, you know, I mean, there's a reason that everybody talks about him as being the best backstage interview of all time. All right. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about we'll talk about the Chase U Secret Santa segment real quick, because that was kind of hilarious. We saw a Secret Santa segment with all of the members of Chase University. Duke Hudson basically shows up and he's like, oh, crap, Secret Santa's today. I thought it was Thursday, and winds up telling one of the other Chase U students that's standing in line holding a plaque that says Andre Chase, number one professor, or something along those lines, convinces him that the dean needs to talk to him because his scholarship is not going to renew this year, and that's very important. So let me hold that plaque for you, and I'll make sure he gets it. So this student runs off, and Duke Hudson just presents the plaque as it was his own gift. Gives Andre Chase a big hug after Andre Chase thanks him for the plaque. And Duke Hudson, there's a close-up on Duke Hudson's face. I forget exactly what he said, but very maniacal kind of look comes across his face, like he's planning something, which I had a feeling. I think that's kind of what we were all thinking all along, that Duke Hudson has something up his sleeve with Andre Chase and Chase University, and he's not as genuine as he might come across, at least Andre Chase anyway. I'm curious to see where this goes, but this segment I thought was a lot of fun. Andre Chase, you know, before Duke Hudson shows up, you know, did his whole blowing up and swearing at one of the other students, and I forget why. It was something over fruitcake.
Does not like fruitcake.
Doesn't like fruitcake. He's allergic to fruitcake, and that was the gift that he had, and there's also a couple other students in line that were holding fruitcakes, and they just kind of quietly get out of line.
Because he's allergic to specifically fruitcake, not fruit, not gluten or bread, but fruitcake.
Right. Well, I mean, hell, have you ever had fruitcake? I'm allergic to fruitcake too. No, it's I thought it was hilarious. I absolutely thought it was hilarious. Like Andre Chase and Chase University, man, they have won me over from when they first debuted. I thought it was like the dumbest thing, but oh my God, it's one of my favorite things on NXT week to week is, you know, the Andre Chase segment. But yeah, I thought this overall was a really entertaining segment. You know, obviously advances kind of this whole what's up Duke Hudson's sleeve, you know, thing, or lack of sleeves. He actually usually cuts the sleeves off. So I guess, you know, not up his sleeve, but you know what I mean. Bruce on Secret Santa.
Well, if you were still holding out hope that Duke Hudson was just a wholesome guy and not a saboteur, I think this finally put a nail in that coffin. He, that conniving smile at the end and the way he took that plaque and made it his own, it all has all the makings of a sociopath, honestly. And he, end game here was for him to take Thea Hale away from Andre Chase and kind of be a tandem like that, kind of in like the polar opposite of a Karrion Kross and Scarlett with the whole energy and everything. But now I just wonder if his overall goal is just to bring pain to Andre Chase. And the best way to do that is by wrecking Chase U. So there's still work to be done here on how they tell the story, what the actual end game is, because I don't think we can get from this segment alone and even all the other segments put together, unless you go through with a fine tooth comb, exactly what Hudson aim and goal is with Chase U. But it doesn't take away from the fact that I'm still interested in what they're doing. And with the Chase U act as a whole, I think Andre Chase's character definitely has a limit, but it works and fits where they have him at right now, what he's doing at NXT. So, and if this character goes to the main roster, he could be like a Simon Dean or a Damien Sandow type. And so, you know, that there's space for that, and you can make money doing that. With Hudson, I think, I said before, I think in NXT, his ceiling is probably main card or, you know, main event gatekeeper, or, you know, the TV title match squash he had to Braun Breaker. I think he's a perfect guy for that. What they do here and how, I guess, malicious and evil or cunning they make him throughout this story will go a long way to reestablishing him, if they can reestablish him, as someone to take more seriously when it comes to the singles championships. Thea Hale's the wild card. What does this mean for her? And if Chase U goes away, is she going to be hampered? Is Chase U hampering her? Is Chase U actually benefiting her? I think there's a lot of questions to be asked with Thea Hale that I don't think will necessarily be answered with this story.
I really want to see what does wind up happening with Thea Hale. I feel like Chase University has been a good thing for her because she's able to be like that. I hate to use the word cheerleader because that's not what she's being, but that's the best word I can think of at the moment. You know, she's
hyperactive.
Yeah. I mean, incredibly hyperactive, but she, you know, she's has that team spirit, if you will, like no other. And I love it. I want to see her like, just I want to see that energy all the time. I absolutely love it, and I don't think it's for everybody, but I personally really enjoy it. But I don't know what is she going to be super enthusiastic about once she's no longer part of Chase University, once Chase University is no longer a thing. So I think, yeah, there's definitely some merit in talking about that, and you know, where she might go. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of plays out, where she's going to develop kind of from there. All right, let's talk real quick about Booker T's interview with Roxanne Perez. As as most of us probably already know, and they definitely brought up here in this interview, Booker T was her trainer, Roxanne Perez's trainer at Reality of Wrestling. Surprisingly, they actually even brought up the Reality of Wrestling a couple times in this segment, which I thought was kind of cool. They don't usually name drop other promotions like that, especially ones that are run by, you know, current like employees of the WWE, well, or independent contractors. You know what I mean? Granted,
well, I think Booker T actually has an employee
contract.
Booker
T probably
is
an employee, yeah, because he's not, you know, like talent, but yeah, but whatever is what it is there. You know what I mean? Employed by the WWE in some fashion, they don't usually bring up, you know, their promotions in WWE. WWE doesn't usually bring up other promotions in general, although that has definitely been, you know, lax past few years, especially like with Mickie James showing up with the Impact Women's Championship and the Royal Rumble and things like that. So I thought it was cool, at least they name dropped Reality of Wrestling, because it played into the story with the two of them, with Booker T and Roxanne Perez. I really, really like the way that they presented this interview. I just thought when they first announced this interview that, you know, Booker T sat down with Roxanne Perez before they actually aired it, I'm like, oh, great. We're going to have like a, you know, Booker T just super excited, shucky ducky, quack, quack, you know, and being Booker T interviewing, you know, his girl. But instead, we kind of got like a, you know, Booker T said, you know, right off the bat, he feels like he's Morpheus in the Matrix, you know, watching Neo grow. And you're just kind of like a, you know, father watching his daughter. That's kind of the feeling that Booker T is getting. And I think that came across really well in this interview. It really showed the bond between, you know, the two of them and how grateful she is to Booker T for everything she learned from him. And they just kind of went back through her history in Reality of Wrestling and even before Reality of Wrestling too, you know, and kind of her journey over the past 5 years to get to where she is. And it's kind of incredible that she's been able to do everything she's done at her age and just in 5 years. So, you know, got to give her a lot of credit there. You know, even if it is a scripted sport. But yeah, overall, I thought this was a great interview. I thought it was really well done. And it really hit home the fact that, you know, Booker T was just kind of like the proud papa here. I thought it was, you know, an emotional interview. And it served Roxanne Perez very well, I think. I was a little concerned, like I said, that Booker T was going to kind of dominate the interview and, you know, try to get his stuff over, as we've seen him do, you know, in the ring anyway, during like some, there was, I think, a championship signing he was involved in. I forget exactly who was in the ring at the time, but, Booker T kind of overshadowed the people in the ring. We were talking about that, you know, that night. And that didn't happen. Roxanne Perez got her time to shine, and nothing, at least for me, came off as like overly cheesy. I think what they were trying to portray, they actually pulled off without it being like super cheesy. Bruce, what do you think about the about this? Am I wrong? Was it super cheesy?
T wasn't Booker T. He sounded more like an actual trainer or a teacher or a mentor during this interview, who was also proud. He called her as Morpheus. He called her the one. He was searching for that one, and she's the one. I think she's the most successful to come out of Reality of Wrestling since he's booked the promotion. And she's not the only one who has signed with WWE, let's make that clear. But she definitely has had the most meteoric rise. She's only been in NXT for 9 months. And in 9 months, she won the breakout tournament. She became NXT Women's Tag Team Champion. She won the first Iron Survival Challenge match, and she became NXT Champion. So that's the 9 months that kind of goes right up there with, on a different scale, but, you know, like a Kurt Angle for 6 months, right? Or a Kurt Angle first year. Or Ronda Rousey first year, right? Where you just accomplishment after accomplishment is being ticked off the box. Yes, smaller scale. NXT is not Raw or SmackDown. When Rousey came up, it's not Kurt Angle's WWF in 1999, was it, when he came up? 2000? Something like that. So different scales, of course. And I'm admitting that. I'm not trying to equate them specifically and saying she's going to become Roxanne Perez, or that she's going to have sort of a downfall like Ronda Rousey. But I think you can look at her 9 months thus far. And yeah, there were a bit of growing pains after she lost the NXT Women's Tag Team Championship and was trying to find a bit of the character and the in-ring stuff and making it match. But the last several months, she's found it. It's worked. I think here, I expected this to be longer, actually. I was kind of shocked at how short it was. I thought it might go upwards of 7 minutes or so. It maybe only went 3 or 4 minutes, if that. It wasn't very long. But they did a good job of showing pictures and videos of Perez when she was younger and then when she was training at Reality of Wrestling. And they showed footage of Booker T when he was champion and coming up. And I think the end there where she talked about how she was always asking him questions at ROW, and now she has another question for him, and it's, you know, what advice do you have for me as a former champion? And he made it clear, checks and championships. You make money, and you make money by winning championships. That's what you have to concern yourself with and what you should be doing. So I think there could have been more that this segment, but it didn't overstay its welcome, at least. And it really gave a... She was already very humanized and personal, but it added even more of the element to Roxanne Perez, because she said when she was 6, she wanted to become the youngest NXT champion or something like that in history. And to think that someone was 6 and is now wrestling at NXT, and NXT's been around for a decade, it just blows my mind, right? Or something like that, or 6 or 9, or whatever the hell she was when she said it. It's just, it's ridiculous to think that a child can have those kind of dreams and actually sort of make it happen when this promotion is basically a decade, or this brand is a decade old. But yeah, just discussing her goals and how she's accomplished them and how she still has, it's going to be, Booker T told her, it's going to be even harder from this point forward. I think it was a really solid job. I wouldn't give it, I'd say an A-, because I still think there's a little more they could have done here, but it definitely was a good segment, a good pre-recorded sit-down interview where they were able to contain the impulses of Booker T and really work to put a shine on Roxanne Perez.
All right, so we're going to end the night with an email from Sean P. from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I think I said that right, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. All right. Hey, Nate and Bruce, I figured I'd email again. I got home late and I'm behind on the show, but I had a few things on the early part of the show. I'm assuming he means NXT and not our show. He says, first, Booker T is so bad on commentary. As Wade always says, heels can't get heat for cheating when Booker T yells, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And then he did it again right in the next match, which leads to my next point about Nikita Lyons. Her match against Zoe Stark was okay, but it's because Lyons hasn't got much better in the ring. I'm holding out hope because she has a lot of charisma. I think Zoe winning was the right move, but do they just have a rematch, or where do they go from here? Or where does Zoe go from here? I hope you guys have a Merry Christmas, and I'll listen to the show this week. I appreciate all you guys do for the Torch, and I hope to call in one day again. Go VIP, everybody. Sean, we hope you're able to call in once again. I know since the switch to Wednesday, from Wednesday to Tuesday, you haven't been able to call in. So looking forward to when you're able to call in once again. Booker T on commentary, I know Bruce and I agree with you there. We're not super fans of him on commentary. So, I agree with what Wade Keller's saying as well. You know, when you ain't, it's tough to get heat when Booker T is yelling, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So Booker's got to just tone it down a little bit on commentary for sure. We did talk a little bit about Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons earlier in the night. Zoe winning, I think, definitely was the right move, for the feud and for Zoe's character. I think right now we're still going to see a feud between Zoe and Nikita Lyons, probably culminating at the next either New Year's Evil or Vengeance Day. I think it all depends on how they kind of book it over the next couple of weeks, if it'll wind up on the New Year's Evil or Vengeance Day cards. But I have a feeling with the length of time that they've put into this feud, it's building them up from, a tag team and then, exploding the tag team, building it up. I feel like they're probably going to wind up putting it on a PLE. After that, I feel like Zoe Stark could be a challenger for the NXT women's title. I feel like she'd be a great foil for Roxanne Perez. I feel like Zoe could even win the title off of Roxanne Perez, you know, given the way she's been booked and how strong she looks and how brutal she's able to make her offense look. So I don't know. We'll kind of see where it goes. But those are kind of my immediate thoughts on, you know, where Zoe Stark's going to wind up, at least over the next handful of months. Bruce, on Sean's email before we wrap it up.
We also didn't talk about Apollo Crews's segment yet, Carmelo Hayes, but...
oh, yeah, there's that too. Okay.
I will disagree with Sean that she has a lot of charisma, because I don't think Zoe Stark, or not Zoe Stark, Lakeyta Lyons has much charisma. I just think people infer charisma from her for a different reason. I'll leave it at that.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So, yeah, this definitely is one of those matches where it's a first match and probably like a three-match series where Stark is going to lose the next one by some kind of shenanigans, or Lyons gets a one-up on her by doing the same thing to her, and it leads to a third match. I think New Year's Evil is probably where this will blow up if they have the match next week, the second match. I don't know if they can extend this all the way out to New Year's Evil without another injury angle to one of them. And I don't want that to happen, because it seems like anytime they need time for Lakeyta Lyons, they just ride her out with an injury angle. And
Did you mean Vengeance Day?
Vengeance Day, what did I say?
You said New Year's Evil.
Oh, well, I don't think they can extend it to I think if they don't have it at New Year's Evil, I don't think they can extend it to Vengeance Day. That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
So Stark definitely is someone that with this iteration can be the one to take Perez. I think that would add even more congestion of making her the leader of Dolan and JCJ, and they could change the name of Toxic Attraction to something else because of their history with Perez, and they could hold a grudge over Perez for making Rose quote unquote leave. I think New Year's Evil is the most likely end date. I don't know if Vengeance Day is where they can actually make it to. If they extend it beyond New Year's Evil, it'll probably be a TV blow-off, a kind of a main event maybe. And maybe that's where you see – I don't know. I'm just throwing a lot of stuff out there. But, yeah, I don't see a lot within Lyons. I think she's definitely trying. It's just that, again, just go back to what I said earlier in the show about her offense and whatnot. I'm pretty sure that they'd put her over Stark, because I think Stark as a heel and less so as a babyface – I think losses to someone like Lyons doesn't booking as much. So I think Lyons benefits more from a victory in this feud than Stark does overall. But we'll see how they go. I was anticipating worse, but I should have been expecting what happened tonight because Stark wasn't there with her. So I think we're going to see Lakeyta Lyons' best matches in this feud. But then the question from there is she going to be able to take what she learned in this feud with Stark and transfer it moving forward? And thus far, her history suggests that that is a much more difficult task than when it is when it's said.
All right. So then we didn't talk about the Apollo Crews segment. So we'll wrap up after this. So Apollo Crews did hit the ring, grabbed the mic, and basically at first he congratulated Perez on becoming the NXT champion. Then he started talking about how he thought he would wind up leaving as NXT champion. He believed that he was going to leave as champion, he wants to essentially challenge for the title once again. It's okay to. Basically, it was okay for him to, I think he said something along the lines of being knocked down a couple pegs or something like that, but that's okay. He's not out of the title contention yet. And that, he will basically duke it out with Bron Breakker next time they wind up in the ring together. Carmelo Hayes hit the ring, essentially saying, he's next in line for the title. And even went so far as to say that Apollo Crews was a future Hall of Famer and that he's got no problem putting a future Hall of Famer, putting a future Hall of Famer down or something like that. I forget exactly the words he used. Overall, I thought it was a pretty decent segment. I think I would love to see a match between Apollo Crews and Carmelo Hayes for the number one contendership. Overall, I thought it was a pretty decent segment. Bruce, what are your thoughts on this and where they might go?
So he said he has no problem putting a future Hall of Famer's face on a jersey up in the rafters because, you know, his gimmick is every opponent he beats, he wears that shirt out, and then the next entrant he has at a PLE or whatnot, they hang the jerseys up from the rafters of all the with the last or the names of every opponent he's beaten. So that was what he said. Prior to this segment, when they showed Crews making his way to the ring, I noted that NXT has been asking on social media who Crews' next opponent or next challenge would be. And then I wrote Dante Chen, maybe. So a little inside joke for the listeners. It wasn't Dante Chen. It was unexpectedly, but also what else is he doing right now? Carmelo Hayes. And I think I mentioned earlier, I do think this is a spot where Carmelo Hayes is going to put Crews over it and go up. Crews here was much better in his promo than we have seen both from him in the ring and also in those different weird segments with Bron Breakker leading into their match at Deadline, whether it was at the diner or on the boat fishing. I did like what he did here, and he said, this is what I envisioned for myself, and it didn't happen, but basically, as he was getting to the point that it's okay to have setbacks and learn and grow from them, you have Hayes come out, and Hayes coming out, and he said, if you're talking about the next contender, I am. He's doing his catchphrase, right? And I thought it was good for Crews at the end of the promo, or at the end of the segment, when he said, name the time and the place, and I'll show you I am. And so I think that was a really nice bit of a nice way to end it. And I like that they did a lot of that trash talking off mic after that point. They just went at it to each other. And you could see kind of the intensity in that segment through their faces, I should say. So I think I'm already more interested in Apollo Crews than when he was going for the NXT championship. And again, I think that has more to do with Bron Breakker than it does with Apollo Crews. So this segment, I think because of the surprise of Hayes being the one to come out, I do like where this is going. I don't think the match is next week, although next week is a loaded card with matches. There's going to be another New Day title match, pretty deadly, but they still have a bunch of matches next week that should be really fun. So if this does happen next week, I think it definitely has main event written all over it. And if it doesn't, and it happens at New Year's Evil, I think this could be the opener.
All right, guys. So with that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. As I said earlier, write the NXT hits and misses, which you can find on pwtorch.com shortly after NXT goes off the air. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at B_D253. And my report for tonight's NXT, if you want to get some of my written thoughts, is up at the Torch and the VIP side.
All right, guys. And to quote Kelly, because I can't think of anything else, we'll see you in 7.